This is Pure Decking for Thursday, December the 12th, 2013. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like descending into a police state, information security, and the complete and utter lack of bathrooms in most science fiction released today. I'm Morps, and tonight we have RU, BSV, Sard, and Madman. And I wish I was recording that glitched out as it, Pac-Man started as it came through Doomsday, because that was awesome. I probably should restart the broadcast box soonish, since it's got a buffer getting full or something on it. So, I am currently drinking Jim Beam with ice. Madman, what do you got?
Four roses on the rocks.
Fantastic. Start.
I have probably my second favorite commercial beer, Samuel Adams Winter Lager.
Ah.
Good have stuff. You tried the Old Fizzy Wiggle yet?
No, I don't know what the hell that is.
It sounds like old-timey slang for penis.
Yes, exactly.
It's a Sam Adams beer from their winter variety pack, and it is awesome.
Huh, yeah, like, this is, like, my, like I said, my second favorite commercial beer, right behind Shot Top, of course, but I do like me some Winter Lager.
I still love that Madman got hate mail about the Shock Top.
That's staying on my computer forever. It's proof that people listen to me on the internet.
BSV, what do you got, man?
I'm sorry, I didn't resupply my Angry Orchard on my way home.
Oh, party foul, out of booze.
It's cold out.
That's true.
The sun's nearly touching planet Earth here. It's not my fucking excuse. I've still got beer.
What are you drinking there, are you?
I need a strong glass of tap water. I've been out of coffee for 3 days.
How are you functional?
Actually, I'm fine. I drink, the equivalent of probably 20 espressos a day. And I'm no ill side effects. Whatsoever. That
just
wasn't
a minor
my internet.
Stroke.
That wasn't the internet. That was me. I'm having a little runtime issue there. I've got to reboot later on.
So, up for discussion. Apparently, the NSA has been monitoring World of Warcraft in Second Life for terrorism.
They're not monitoring WoW. They're raiding. They're all in Black Temple. And there's a senior White House official saying, where the fuck's the heels?
Oh.
They are the hardest working.
That would be so much better than the truth.
What if they are, though? How do we know they're not spending 10 hours a day just fucking farming gold and selling it to try and prop up the American economy?
They have to blend in.
Because that would actually be profitable and a decent use of our computing power. They're actually just looking to see if any nerds are planning to blow up a building. The answer is no. They're eating fucking Cheetos, slowly going blind from diabetes, and attempting to down a raid boss.
How do you kill that which has
like the American
life?
Dream sounds so good.
So, let's
by
see.
Exposing it to the outside.
So, let's see, we got the first story from The Guardian here. The agencies the documents show have built mass collection capabilities against Xbox Live console network, which has more than 48 million players. Real-life agents have been deployed into virtual realms, from the orc hordes of World of Warcraft to human avatars of Second Life. How do you deploy an agent into the internet? I mean, no, okay, stop. You're not being deployed. You're being assigned to a desk. That is a major... You're not deployed into World of Warcraft. Believe me, if you were, it would be awesome, and I want that tech.
Hey, it like took Tron. A long time with a ball peen hammer and a network card, but Johnson stopped twitching, and I'm fairly certain he's in the game.
Well, that's one way to make a cyborg, by force.
Oh, can you imagine that? You've finally broken your WoW habit of 7 years. You've got your ass up. You've gone to Langley. You've become an FBI dude. You've worked your way through. You're now in the NSA, and they assign you to play Warcraft again.
Like, yo. Oh god, I finally tore myself free.
No!
At first, yeah, fucking brilliant.
Alright, we're now doing AV. I need groups 1, go to the tower 1, stay until it caps. Group 2, go to tower 2,
Why
stay until it caps.
Why aren't you applying for NSA? You're fucking perfect.
There were attempts to recruit potential informants from the game's tech-friendly users. That would actually be a fucking badass way to be recruited into a spy agency. You know, you're just dicking around in Second Life. Somebody walks up, hi, you look like a spy.
But what useful information would you get? Hi, this is how you make the giant dancing penis. How is that making me safer?
Well, the government's got to spend its money on something.
We've got 32 prims left, sir, and we need some more Linden dollars to buy some land. We believe there are some terrorists down in the furry section and over near the Nine Cat area.
The NSA document, written in 2008, titled Exploring Terrorist Use of Games in Virtual Environments, stressed the risk of leaving game communities unmonitored, describing them as a target-rich communications network where intelligence targets could hide in plain sight. Intelligence targets.
They've never been to the Barrens. This proves it. They never went to the Barrens. How the hell do you miss where everyone levels from, like, 1 to 87?
The games, the analyst wrote, are an opportunity. According to the briefing notes, so many different U.S. Intelligence agents were conducting operations inside games that a defcalation group was required. Deconfliction group was required to ensure they weren't spying on or interfering with each other. That's Barron's chat. Barron's chat was nothing but federal government code the entire time. Chuck Norris is like the code word for the nukes.
Like, oh crap. So when I silenced Barron's chat for like a minute and a half, I may have actually inadvertently affected our national security.
Apparently. Wait, how did you silence the Barron's for a minute?
It was one of the most wonderful Your Mama's So Fat jokes ever.
Oh, we've got to hear this.
Y'all have seen 4chan, so it won't affect you as much, but apparently whenever you're talking to 12-year-olds, saying your mama's so fat, the only reason your dad gets head is she gets hungry in the middle of the night will silence them.
We are 8 minutes in on the dot, and we've already crossed that line.
You asked.
I did ask. You are.
But that may have inadvertently allowed terrorists to sneak through because it silenced the chat. They stopped communicating in WoW.
If properly exploited, games could provide vast amounts of intelligence, according to the NSA document. It uses a window for hacking attempts to build pictures of people's social networks through buddy lists and interactions, and to make approaches by undercover agents to obtain target identifiers, such as profile photos, geolocation, and a collection of communications. Here's the money quote. Al-Qaeda terrorists target selectors and have been found associated with Xbox Live, Second Life, World of Warcraft, and other GVEs, games in virtual environments, the document notes. Other targets include Chinese hackers, an Iranian nuclear scientist, Hezbollah, and Hamas members. Yes, Al-Qaeda is recruiting across Xbox Live.
Not only about being teabagged by an asshole, he might yell Allah Akbar and shoot me.
How does this work? What do you say to the 12-year-old teabagging people in Halo to recruit them into Al-Qaeda?
You seem to be good at shooting people. Want to try it in real life?
do you want a real needler? It's called sarin gas. I just need you to take it into your school.
Oh, crap.
And then jump on the canister.
You realize now if this is actually true in a couple of years' time, no longer will I be yelling Allahu Akbar, it'll be YOLO 420 constantly. It'll be even more annoying.
Oh, God. Oh, man.
Sorry, I've got to give this story the same respect as it deserves. Fucking none.
Yeah. Oh, Ars Technica had a different take on it. The strongest parts on the report focus on how games can be used as part of propaganda efforts, presenting a particular viewpoint or ideology in an engaging and easy-to-digest way. For example, MTV's Delphore is Dying is cited as evoking sympathy for the people of Dalfour by putting players in the shoes of a refugee. I don't see that as being a fun game. Worryingly, neo-Nazi entertainment company Resistance Records. I didn't know there was a neo-Nazi entertainment company.
There's quite a few, actually.
That's hilarious. Used a game called Ethnic Cleansing to reinforce its message that Jews and non-white races are subhumans worth killing.
It's a shit game. Don't even bother, kids.
God.
Grand Theft Auto is far better if you want to run over black people and Jews.
The report points to two games that let users take on the role of Palestinian freedom fighter, taking on the occupying forces of the Israeli Defense Forces. Blah, 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 blah. So, all the jokes we used to make about them monitoring the video games and getting really upset, apparently that was real.
I think it's a waste of time, because I've played World of Warcraft. There aren't terrorists in there. There are people with no life. But I can see it as a great way of actually hiding something.
Oh, yeah, no, as far as an out-of-band communication goes, go find some MMO that nobody's ever heard of. Or, you know, I mean, you can set up your own Second Life servers with the OS grid stuff. I mean, it's not...
Go to one you've never heard of, like EverQuest or something like that. No one plays that or ever
has. Oh, yeah, there you go.
Evercrack?
Yeah, exactly.
I believe the first people who died from not eating playing video games were playing Evercrack.
Yeah, that's a...
That's oh, yeah, number... so, my brothers and sisters in Evercrack dying.
We're proud of that. Himself.
I was going to say, Sar, didn't you used to play EverQuest, like, an unhealthy amount?
Yeah, religiously.
Okay, I was just... I wasn't sure. Of course, we don't have Heavy on to address the terrorist situation in EVE Online, although...
Heavy is the terrorist.
Well, there's that.
Yes,
I wasn't actually
going
to make that joke because I thought it was too obvious.
Never forget.
I mean, how many wars did he start? I forgot.
Not enough.
I
want to kill $1 billion in actual capital by starting a war in EVE Online.
Yeah, he came close.
Did he really? Damn. I was... Okay.
That's a story
I knew he was
the
in there inciting shit. I mean,
story for after the show.
Fair enough.
How many people are still angry over what happened? There's literally lawsuits going on.
And that's why we use code names, ladies and gentlemen.
And that's why he's on the road.
They can't track him down in kneecap.
There's a reason
he doesn't sleep
up
in the same place every night.
That's a... So now you're all starting to figure it out. The only reason he packed up, moved out of his house, and went on the road, oh, just a couple of months after this incident happened.
Okay, so we know he's being monitored. Who else? I wonder what other games they're monitoring at this point.
Animal Crossing.
Maybe.
None of the Sims?
Is The Sims an MMO?
They were talking about it for a bit.
I think the whole SimCity thing got rid of that idea.
I'm trying to think of what other large chat systems would be worth. I mean, I guess, of course, the Blizzard stuff. And, you know, things like Second Life and... Oh, I don't know. There's so many small-time MMOs now. It's like, are they worth monitoring or not? Probably not, really. Kind of fragmented out. I mean, yeah, WoW is probably still the number one MMO. I haven't seen the numbers lately.
Magic. Their online community is pretty decent.
Ooh, yeah, I could see that one, the Magic Online stuff.
Oppo's house.
No, they just let 4chan handle that one. Yeah, I got a story about Habbo Hotel, too. That's always great fun when you find that on a machine that's getting DDoSed, like, amazing amounts. Like, gee, I wonder what they were doing. Anyways, Well, you guys want to move on to news stories, or do you want to make crack jokes about the government wasting money? I mean, we can joke about this all day long. I mean, at the end of the day, after they spent, you know... What, a month investigating it to figure out that there's nothing going on there?
Really? Yeah, how long? Bargas had to give up their accounts after a month?
Well, I'm just saying, you could have figured out most of these games in a month to figure out there's nothing worth monitoring there. I mean, did you say, oh, yeah, no, we better monitor this. I'm going to actually need a couple of rigs. We're going to multibox here so we can monitor various instances at the same time. Why didn't they just go to, like, Blizzard for an agreement? I cut it out of the article. Apparently, they went to Linden Labs to try to get an agreement on some of the monitoring of Second Life, which doesn't really surprise me because of the financial aspect of it. But I'd imagine they'd just go to most of these MMOs and say, we're the government, we want your chat logs. You can fight us in court if you want, but here's your national security letter, you know?
I don't know if they would actually fight them in court over that.
Most of them wouldn't. I mean, that's how that works. That's what they've been doing. That's how they've been getting the SSL keys and everything else. They just kind of show up with the piece of paper that says, you will give us this or we're going to shoot you in the head. I mean, I'm exaggerating only a little bit.
They don't actually state that part. They just use pointer
gun. It's implied. It is actually implied. It's like, you will be, you know, if you mention the existence of this, you're in violation of national security and can be indefinitely detained and shit like that. I mean, those letters are crazy reading. So,
like, have you heard of habeas corpus? Because we haven't.
Yeah, pretty much. The FISA court pretty much lets them do whatever the hell they want. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if all the major MMOs are bugged. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. So, learn to set up your own servers, people, if you want to communicate without it being logged.
See, that's why all the major guilds use TeamSpeak or Vent.
Yeah, but they... Ooh, I'll bet the major rentals for those things are probably watched, too. Now, they probably watch network traffic, because I don't know how you get all those streams independently. But, I bet that's a big deal, is the major Vent and TeamSpeak server providers are probably all monitored, too. It's a real shame. The internet was supposed to be all about freedom, and now it's all about, you know, the best and easiest ways to give the government and companies your information.
Only so they can sell me stuff.
Yeah.
And crush
and
my
keep
dreams.
Me safe.
And keep me safe.
Enjoy your little gray box. I mean,
Can I get one in blue or green?
No, the boxes are gray.
The committee hasn't approved other colors yet. Get back to us in 2025. You might get taupe.
I chaired the subcommittee that made the decision on what color the report on the color of the cube should be. We kept it gray. You know there's somebody in there like that, too. That's the sad part. Oh, okay. First story up. Let's get into actual current events here. First story up is from the Register. The latest release of Firefox web browser version 26 now blocks Java software on all websites by default unless the user specifically authorizes the Java plugin to run. In other words, you're going to get a pop-up anytime you go anywhere that requires Java saying, Java wants to run on this page. Do you want to allow it? This change has been a long time coming. The Mozilla Foundation had originally planned to make click-to-run the default for all versions of the Java plugin beginning with Firefox 24, but decided to delay the change after dismayed users raised a stink. Beginning with the version of Firefox that shipped on Tuesday, whenever the browser encounters a Java applet or a Java web start launcher, it first displays a dialog box asking for authorization before allowing the plugin to launch. Users can also opt to click Allow and Remember, which allows the current web page which adds the current web page to an internal whitelist so that Java code will automatically run in the future without future human intervention. Mozilla's move comes after a series of exploits made the Java plugin one of the most popular vectors for web-based malware attacks over the past few years. So many zero-day exploits targeting the plugin have been discovered, in fact, that the Firefox devs have opted to give all versions of Java the cold shoulder, including the most recent one. Generally speaking, Mozilla plans to activate the click-to-run for all plugins by default, although the Adobe Flash Player plugin has been given a pass so far under the prevalence of Flash on the web. In addition to the change, the default Java plugin behavior to Firefox 26 includes a number of security patches, bug fixes, and minor new features. The official release notes are not The official release notes are available on Firefox's website, and a list of changes and the release can be had. As usual, current Firefox installations can be upgraded to version 26 using the internal update mechanism. The installers for the latest release are available from the homepage. So, in case you weren't following that one, Firefox has basically kicked the Java plugin in the balls. And for most home users, this is fantastic because if you hit a page that obviously you weren't expecting some kind of Java to run and you get this pop-up box, great, it probably just stopped malware. But businesses rely heavily on Java, and the rub of it is they usually rely on very specific versions of Java. So now, whenever you go to hit, say, your Cisco or Checkpoint VPN or Web VPN extender, you're going to get this box every fucking time.
Don't you just hit allow and remember and you're good?
You do, but now you're whitelisting a domain. And I just, in practice, I've gotten this box on every single one of my VPNs every time I log in. It's not a big deal to hit allow. It's just, it's a little frustrating to have to hit this every time. And more importantly, IT departments all over the place are going to be getting this question of, this box came up, what do I do? Well, just hit allow and remember. Well, that's great until that whitelist gets cleared out for any reason, or you change something on your server and it's coming from someplace else. It's great for home users. I think it's a good change. I really do. I just really feel bad for all the help desk calls that are going to be generated by this.
Can I hit okay? Yes, you can, sir. But will I get a virus? You're going to get one anyway, sir. You're a moron.
Well, the sad part is you can say, oh, no, just hit okay and it'll run, which means you've just trained that user to always click allow no matter what, no matter where they are on the internet.
Oh, fuck.
That's scary.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, Sarge, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Right? Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely, man.
So what's going to happen is, well, the help desk always said just to always hit allow. So when I was on, you know, superhotfurries.com or I don't know.
Why were you there at all, sir? I don't know what you're looking at porn. Everyone does it. But that porn? I'm now judging you as morally inept. And I'm ending this help desk call. You're being escalated to no one cares.
I want that setting in my help desk software now.
There you go.
I'm going to have that created. I'm going to put in a work request to have that created. I'm going to put in a work request to make somebody else make that. Because nobody will really blink an eye if I put that in there. But, all right. Next story up is from Ars Technica. PC gamers who are champing at the bit to try out their very own Steam machines won't have to wait very long to start tinkering, as Valve has revealed that its recently announced Steam OS will be available this Friday. That's tomorrow. The announcement comes alongside word from Valve that its prototype Steam machines, along with the companion Steam controller, will be shipped out to 300 randomly selected US beta testers on Friday. Valve plans to notify the lucky testers via an email at 2 p.m. Pacific today. The beta participants will get a special badge on their Steam account so journalists and fellow players can start bugging them for their impressions incessantly. If you're not part of that lucky group of 300, you're probably more interested in the fact that SteamOS will be made available when the prototype hardware ships. Downloadable by individual users and commercial OEMs. More information about the release is coming soon, and the company says, but Valve is already warning that unless you're an intrepid Linux hacker already, we're going to recommend that you wait until later in 2014 to try it out. Of course, I'm pulling this down tomorrow to play with it.
Of course.
The suggestion that the version of the OS is to be released this week may require some manual compiling and building. Oh, God, like you have to be some kind of crazy. Okay. It's not that fucking hard to build your own software in Linux. It's really not. Slash autoconfig slash make all. Come on. Make install. It's not that hard. The Steam controllers won't be available commercially for a while either, so the full DIY Steam machine experience Valve is selling is still a ways off. In any case, Valve is promising more information on the final commercial versions of the Steam Machine program at CES and a press event slated for the evening of January 6th. Ars Technica will be there, blah, 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 blah. Okay. So, yeah, SteamOS beta version of it or alpha version of it or something is supposedly coming out tomorrow. So I'm very interested in this because I would love to move to Linux full-time, and gaming is pretty much the only thing preventing that.
Same with a lot of people.
Yep.
The only thing I'm still seeing is, are the games going to be actually made for this OS? Because that's the problem Steam is running into now with their Linux build, is certain games just don't work on Linux.
I've got another story later in the thing. Activision is actually blocking Linux games. So they're actively telling their developers not to release Linux versions.
So they're going to actively not support the Steam OS.
Apparently. So we'll get to that later. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what this does. I'm really hoping to start seeing some of these, seeing new stuff come out with. Of course, they'll say Windows, Mac, and Steam OS. They won't say Linux. And that's cool because that gives them the one version of Linux they actually have to support. Well, fine, because you know there's going to be a massive amount of information out there for making the SteamOS games work on any standard Linux build, or maybe with a VM layer or whatever. But I think this is a good thing. So it might require some tinkering or some hackery to get everything working, but I just want to see people getting the kick in the pants to support something other than Windows and occasionally Mac. Because I run Linux on all my servers. I enjoy running it on my desktops, but I can't live in it full time, which is annoying. So,
I just like broadening the market.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that and Windows 8 is terrible.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That interface
they stopped
is
at 7.
Damned goofy. I don't know how else to describe it. I really don't. I don't want to use a tablet OS on 2 31-inch monitors. I just don't. It's like, we've designed this for a 8-inch screen that you hold in your crotch. That's not... No. Oh, well. ZDNet. Next story is from ZDNet. I'm trying to figure out how to say a word.
Skip it and just say what it means.
The Federal Patent Court of Germany has ruled that the Microsoft's European Union patent EP0618540 for its file allocation table, or common namespace for long and short file names, is entirely invalid. While Microsoft is expected to appeal the decision, it will be months before it appears in front of the next court. In the meantime, one of Microsoft's main Android patent weapons has been rendered harmless for now in the EU. This may sound like a minor patent. It's not. Microsoft has been using this patent since 2003 to pressure Linux and Android companies that use the popular FAT file system for compatibility with other operating systems. Just how important is it? In July of 2012, Microsoft got a German court to give them the right to ban all Motorola Android devices sales in Germany because of it. Microsoft has also used this and other FAT patents to get numerous Android vendors to sign patent licensing agreements. These patent agreements in turn have made Android, not Windows RT, not Windows Phone 8, its most profitable mobile operating system. What they mean by that is Android is making more money for Microsoft than either of Microsoft's mobile operating systems, and it's because Microsoft is essentially patent trolling here. It's been estimated that Microsoft makes as much as $8 for every Android device sold. This would add up to Microsoft making as much as $3.4 billion in 2013 from Android sales. That's important.
Wow.
I like that line. That's important. Yes.
That's a shit ton of cash.
Yeah. Don't count Microsoft's patent out just yet. The patent has been attacked numerous times before. It has also been rejected and then reinstated at least once before. Still, this result, combined with the recent judgment in the U.S. version of the patent, Common Namespace for Long and Short File Names, patent number 5758352, invalid for obviousness, may finally blunt this patent's usefulness for Microsoft. So, Basically, both EU and the US courts have decided that this Microsoft patent on file allocation tables is obvious to anyone in the computer field, and it pretty much is, because how else would you index the files on a hard drive? And is finally invalidating this damn thing. So it's nice to see the patent office actually working. But what they're not saying is who brought the lawsuit to get the thing into court in the first place, because whoever it is dropping a pretty penny on it.
I want to just point out something that's exceptionally scary to me, and I don't think anyone else who's looked at this story has noticed it. There's over 5 million patents.
Yep.
Yep. Well, it's not like that number ever resets, so there's that many filed since the office opened.
Not all of those may still be applied.
Your patent on the wagon wheel just may not be all that useful anymore.
I'm just thinking, are there really that many ideas that were not obvious to people in the field? And truly unique?
Probably not.
I know there are at least a dozen patents for toast in that number.
How do you patent toast?
You don't phrase it as I'm patenting
12 times.
One of the ways is you don't phrase it as I'm patenting toast. One of the phrases is patenting a way of reheating bread to increase
crispy
freshness.
Consistency.
That's another one too. Yeah.
Yeah,
there are a lot of junk patents in the patent office.
Oh, somebody needs to index these things in a database and just start looking at them.
Every time they try it, corporations shit bricks. But Congress is actually working on it right now. It's one of the good things they're doing. If it actually gets done.
Well, that needs to be done because the patent system has been horribly broken for a while. It's not actually the system. It's just been abused, and the people running the system haven't really been...
It's not the system, it's the people they put in it, because if you read the phrasing of what it takes to get a patent, most patents will be denied.
And it has to be non-obvious to somebody in the field, right?
Yes, that's one of the big parts of it. One of my favorite patents, this guy was working on a new accelerator, and it was just combining two existing technologies. They said, no, like, these things already exist. Anyone in the field could say, let's combine them. But not a lot of judges in the patent courts are willing to do that.
Yeah.
They just rubber stamp it.
Oh, I need to... I don't know.
And it's even worse in software.
Oh, I know.
Oh, it's a whole lot worse in software.
Software's terrible because they're like patenting the arrangement of pixels that form an arrow in a scroll bar and shit like that. It's just like you really just patented a standard image. Really? it's terrible, man. It is. It's absolutely crazy. There's a company that's making tons of money because they apparently somehow got the patent on connecting a scanner to a network, and they don't sue HP or Xerox or anybody else who makes a network scanner. Instead, they go after companies that use them. Like, you bought this scanner. Well, the scanner infringes on our patent, so we're suing you, the user, because apparently you can do that.
Yeah. Another big suit that's going on right now is suing coffee shops and anyone that offers Wi-Fi for patent violations.
Damn. Providing Wi-Fi is a violation of a patent.
Yeah, a lot of patent trolls have realized that if you go after a major corporation or a big company, you could get a huge score, but they also have lawyers that will fight you. If you go after a mom-and-pop shop and just say, if you pay us $1,000, we'll go away.
Yeah, they'll pay the go-away money.
Yep. So they're going after copiers. They're going after people that attach things in email. That's another patent that's being enforced right now in the U.S., email attachments. So when I've been applying for jobs yesterday, I've violated somebody's patent because I attached my resume.
Yeah, it is impossible not to. It is impossible to use a computer and not violate somebody's patents these days.
There's a patent on syncing data.
Yes, there is. There's probably several. There's somebody else who's going around who's filing patent claims against podcasters.
That one has been thrown out.
That one was thrown out. We talked about it on Decking.
The Freedom Foundation actually won that one.
Yeah, there was a guy who was who somehow claimed patent on podcasting. He had nothing to do with the people who wrote RSS, so no idea. But yeah,
his patent was filed back in the like 92 or 93.
Well, it was, and like it was a for books on tape thing. Yeah,
yeah.
So, all right, next story up. This one's from Time.com. The phone call came from a charming woman with a bright, engaging voice. Okay, I'm going to just... They have this thing all written up as a story. But I actually got one of these calls. Not from the same company, but that's why I'm covering this, is I actually got one of these. And I was at work, and I went in my boss's office because he had heard the whole thing. It's like, I think I was talking to a soundboard. Because I'm dead serious. I'm dead serious now. Because they called me about some, you know, furthering your education opportunity, which is bullshit, right? But it's like, oh, you filled out an online form. No, I didn't. But when I interrupted the thing to say I did not fill out anything and you need to put me on your do not call list, the way it stopped wasn't like a human being interrupted. It was like somebody hitting stop on a soundboard. You know what I mean? Anybody who's worked in audio a little bit, like, I can give a fantastic example. Hang on just a second. Let me get...
Oh, fuck.
Oh, that's short, too short.
Oh, fuck.
Okay, I'm not going to get it to stop. I need a longer vocal sample, and I don't have one on this board. But that immediate cutoff you get if you just, like, stop a soundboard, that's what it was doing. Like, I nice. Was talking to a soundboard as opposed to, you know, a person who's going to, you know, you're going to hear them bite their lip or, you know, stop mid-sentence, right? So that's why I wanted to do this story, is because I actually got one of these. The phone call came from a charming woman with a bright, engaging voice to the cell phone of a Time Washington Bureau Chief, Michael Scherner. She wanted to offer a deal on health insurance, but something was fishy. When Scherner asked point blank if she was a real person or a computer-operated robot voice, she replied enthusiastically that she was real with a charming laugh. But then she failed several other tests. When asked what vegetable is found in tomato soup, she said she did not understand the question. When asked multiple times what day of the week it was yesterday, she complained repeatedly of a bad connection. Over the course of the next hour, several Time reporters called her back, working to uncover the mystery of her bona fides. Her name, she said, was Samantha. It was Samantha West, and she was definitely a robot, giving the pitch-perfect reception of her answers. Her goal was to ask a series of questions about health coverage, are you on Medicare, etc., and then transfer a potential customer to a real person who would close the sale. If you want, you can call her, too. The number was 484-589-5611. At the bottom of the article, they said that the number's now been disconnected. I imagine just so many people calling it off the Time article to... Just to see. This number, if you Google it, is the subject of much discussion online as other recipients of Samantha West calls complain on chat boards about mysteriously persistent lady who keeps calling them. A friendly sounding woman on the other end claimed I requested health insurance information, writes one Mark. She doggedly refused to deviate from her script. After answering the questions, one Time reporter was transferred to an actual human who did not promptly end the call, as others had when asked about Samantha. As for company's website, the real human on the other end of the line said it was PremierHealthAgency.com, the website of a Fort Lauderdale company. We're here to help because we care, is the company's motto on its homepage. A Time reporter called the company directly, identified himself, and said Tom was doing a story about the robot who calls people on company's behalf. We don't use robot calls, sir, the person who answered the phone, promptly before hanging up the phone. We don't use robot calls. Click.
Because that would take the joy of me hanging up on you out of my day.
When the number was called a second time, a real-life employee from Your Health Plans, Inc., who gave his name as Bruce Martin, answered the phone. He said he was not sure if Samantha West's phone number mentioned above was one of the company numbers. First of all, we use TV, we use radio, we use internet. So, yeah, I imagine what happened is this health company probably had no clue about the robocalls because they had outsourced that to somebody else. I'm not saying they're innocent here. I'm saying that they purposely had no clue. It's like, no, we've hired an advertising firm on the internet, and they handle that. No, no, they handle that. Stop asking questions. They handle that. Martin's also said he would inquire internally about whether Samantha West worked for the company, but would not be able to respond to the request Monday night. Update, as of December 11th, one day after the story was published, the phone number listed above was no longer answered, rather it was diverted to a busy signal, and the website had been taken offline. So, yeah, somebody realized they were gotten somebody's attention and shut it all down. But I actually got one of these damned things for a different company. Now, I blocked the phone number on my phone, of course, but it was interesting because you could tell it was a soundboard. And I wasn't sure if it was a soundboard being operated by somebody like we used to do for prank phone calls with like the Arnold sound voice soundboard or shit like that. But if you think about it, there's a lot of information out there about using Google's APIs to hook into the Android stuff and do voice recognition and voice synthesis. So I have no doubt that somebody's put together a script just piping your phone call over VoIP, like straight into Google for voice translation, and then they just have their script playing waves respond to you. That way you don't get the really, really bad Indian accent or shit like that.
I'd like to have a look at how they set it up.
Yeah, that actually sounds
kind of cool. I'm curious about how it all works now.
It wouldn't be that hard to set up. There was if you wanted to find out something about it, there's a guy who set up his Raspberry Pi. He's trying to emulate Jarvis from the Iron Man movies, and he had a bunch of information about how he was basically using Google's voice recognition for everything. And, of course, anybody who's got an Android phone knows you can talk to the keyboard, and it'll do a decent enough job of figuring out what you're saying. It wouldn't be that hard at all to just pipe it back to Google, figure out what response you've got. You'd basically be looking for keywords in your script and then just play a WAV file back over the VoIP line.
Right.
So, I don't know if that's more efficient or less efficient than the Indian call center, but, yeah.
Probably, like I said, because then people will be more responsive to it because it does sound more realistic and they don't have to deal with the accent.
Yeah, you get on the phone and you go, I don't think you sound quite American. And, they hang up on you when you say shit like that. I don't know why.
You just say that stuff like that so they'll hang up on you.
Really? I just start playing a character. I'm not trying to get them to hang up. I just want to see how they respond. So, but almost as much fun as telling the guy who tells you you've got a Windows virus that you're using a Commodore 64 and you want to meet the person who wrote a Windows virus that runs on that because they don't know what a Commodore is. Yeah. It's like, oh, yes, you have a virus. No, it's a Commodore 64, buddy. This
are you? You can comment on that, can't you?
It's that I get them all the time.
Yeah.
It's great. Like the one I've been doing lately is a sex worker. Stop talking shit.
A prostitute or a phone sex worker?
Phone sex worker. It freaks the fucking Hindu dudes out so hard, man, especially the highly religious ones. Like, they will get so offended and just start screaming in Hindi down the phone. It's fucking
they
great.
They called you. It's not your fault.
I know, but it's fantastic.
That's great.
Or, if you know it's coming from Pakistan or something like that, just tell them, can you hold for a sec while you finish your hand-drawn face of the prophet? And they freak the fuck out.
Ooh, I'm going to have to try that one.
But there's so many fun stuff to do. Like, you just got to get creative with it.
Yeah, hang on, I'm just about to finish my drawing here. Hang on. Oh, what are you drawing, sir? The prophet Muhammad. What?
Yeah, they freak the fuck out, man.
I've turned his turban into a bomb and he's masturbating.
Ask them what they had for lunch. Tell them you had a bacon sandwich, and fuck me, it's fantastic.
But bacon sandwiches are delicious.
They are. Yeah.
They're also pork. You know what's also great? If you're ever going out to eat with some coworkers and you know one of them's Muslim, turn to the waitress after they've taken your orders and ask how much it would cost to add bacon to his cheeseburger. That was a wonderful night.
I spend all day on the internet. I've learned how to be successfully insulting constantly while making it sound polite.
Nice. I really think that this is grounds for a new G15 show. We need to hook up a recorder to your phone, are you? And that's all. You do the highlights of the week, you know?
I've looked at phone patches and stuff like that, and I've thought about it, and yeah. It just gets so annoying after a while, though.
It wouldn't be that hard to set up a VoIP client of some sort. Like, I guess you could probably use Skype or any of the other VoIP accounts out there. You know, find one you can route into Jack, and then go onto every website you can that asks you for a phone number and put that phone number in.
Nice.
That, you know, get it on all the call lists. So all you got to do is just, you know, sign into the account, and of course it'll immediately start ringing once you get it on enough call lists, and just record them.
And you can find out who wrote Samantha, and then you could just automate your new show completely.
The MP3 file just uploads itself. Oh, that wouldn't be that hard, actually. So what's your opinion on the Prophet Muhammad? Just record.
Oh, this seriously sounds like a show.
And in other news, I just crapped on the Prophet's project.
Dude, it gets too easy, man. It's being creative, Larry, and sit there. That's why I like to switch it up, you know. Try and figure out the accents, where they're from. So do you go with the sex worker, or do you go with the Muhammad jokes, or do you go with the Jewish joke, or the bacon joke? It's too easy, man. These people are just so easily trolled. I don't know how these poor bastards go to work every day to have people just go, fuck off, you cunt, piss off. That's all they get. And occasionally some dude's, yes, hello, how are you? Oh, I'm fine. Yeah, I'm just doing a little bit of a drawing here. Oh, yeah, how's your day going? Okay. Oh, look at that. It looks like the Prophet Muhammad. It's fantastic. You know? You've got to be nice when you do it. Otherwise, it's just, you're there entertaining yourself, not them. Just remember that. This is masturbation, kids.
Are you, when you want to clip that out later, that's at 48 minutes and... 48 minutes and 2 seconds, I believe.
Oh, man, I got some good clipping coming up for the start of this week's show.
Okay. All right, next story up. This one's from Pharonix. A game studio has shared publicly that Activision is preventing a new game from actively being made for that platform, a.k.a. Linux. Gabriel Knight, Sins of the Fathers, with a 1993 adventure game out of Sierra Online that was popular back in the day, is now being remade as Gabriel Knight, Sins of the Father, 20th Anniversary Edition. So they're remaking the game. The title was announced back in October with plans to release the game for Windows, Apple, OS X, iPad, Android, and Linux, which means they're writing the damn thing in Java. The game remake is being developed by Pinkerton Road and Phoenix Online Studios. So now all dandy, right, with another cross-platform game targeting Linux. Wrong. Wyndon L. Hathaway, the technical director for Phoenix Online Studios, shared recently in a forum thread that the Linux port is no longer happening. The Linux port of Gabriel Knight, Sins of the Father 20th Anniversary Edition is being canceled, not for a technical reason, but because Activision, the game's publisher, won't allow the title to be released on Linux. As in, the developers were going to do this. They were going to make a Linux release, and their publisher called them up and said, yeah, no.
But why would a publisher care?
Exactly.
The publisher should want the largest number of people capable of buying the game.
Yeah.
Probably
publishing houses are subsidized through gaming platforms.
Yeah, they probably got an agreement with Microsoft or somebody not to do a Linux release. But on the forum, anyways, here's what Weldon Hathaway wrote. Figured this deserved its own thread. I hate to be the bearer of bad news here, but my previous statement that GK would be available on Linux turns out to be incorrect. I can't even begin to imagine why, but Activision isn't allowing the game to be made for that platform. Just PC, Mac, Android, and iOS devices. So...
it's fucking retarded. I hope this turns around and bites them straight in the ass with the advent of Steam OS, like I said, coming out. And
yeah,
and game is a fickle. They will go wherever the game is being made, whatever platform, depending on what they want to make.
You think, really? I mean,
play,
there's...
sorry.
Well,
and
I mean,
all
the
gamers
is...
like us probably either will have multiple machines or we want the one machine. I don't think this Steam box is going to be this be-all and end-all of gaming rigs that everyone's been dreaming of.
Oh,
it's
got to
help,
not.
Though.
Absolutely not. But
oh,
I
it's going to kill the gaming industry.
Well, Microsoft is doing a good job of that.
They all are, but yeah, sorry, Morbus, you finish.
Well, the thing with the Steam Box is that it's a Linux-based device sold as a console. So what I'm hoping you see from that is major, you know, the AAA game makers going, well, we want to be on all, we want to be on everything. So, you know, they already do, you know, PS4, Xbox, and PC. So, well, might as well go ahead and do Steam Box too, so we get every major console out there. But, of course, Steam OS has to pick up for that to really be the case. But anything that does a Steam OS port, by definition, should work on a Linux box, which would be fantastic because that would let me, you know, live in Linux full time, which I think is a better environment than Windows. But, you're right, it may not. They may just ignore it. I don't think the consoles itself are going to be anything fantastic. They look like, you know, standard desktop PCs or, well, gamer rigs, really. But I don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting to watch. I'm definitely curious about it. But it's amazing to me that obviously the developers are planning to do this, and if they're doing it for that many platforms at once, they're already writing it. If you're going to do that kind of a multi-platform release, you don't write it in, you know, Visual Basic or something where you have to rewrite it for every different platform. You write it in Java or libgdx or, you know, hacks or something else that can compile to anything. And I imagine that, you know, to do the Linux port, they would literally have to go into their tool chain and just do build --Linux, right? Or it's Java. In that case, all they got to do is write a wrapper. And for whatever reason, apparently they've been told by Activision not to. So, I mean, I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me to write the thing five times to do different platforms. You write it once and then just compile. There's plenty of cross-platform tools out there for that shit already. So I'm just confused why, if a developer is already willing to do it, why they would nix it.
Contracts.
The only thing I can think of is Apple and Microsoft bought them.
It's got to be. I mean, I don't know
what
else.
Why wouldn't Rockstar do a release of Grand Theft Auto on PC straight away at the same time?
One of the console makers paid them off, obviously.
Exactly. There's contracts in this.
So.
Rockstar is retained with Sony, and that contract will be, I would have to think, at least another 20 years due to the success of the Grand Theft Auto series.
Probably. Well, you know, Sony has been really good about these exclusivity contracts. They got a whole bunch of them back in the PS2 days, and they picked up several of them when a lot of companies were jumping ship from Nintendo to you know, the next-gen consoles. Like, you know, Sony was fantastic at snapping up, you know, Capcom and Square and a bunch of other, and tying them up into these exclusivity contracts. So I wouldn't put it past them in the slightest for the PS3 and 4 stuff.
Well, I think one console, like for console players, like one console in the market is really going to stifle the games market. The company there will have the right to dictate the price of games and everything. It'll be crazy.
Yeah.
Well, this next-gen platforms, they seem to be pretty even. I'm in retail, and we've been selling tons of Xbox One, so there's at least two consoles in the next-gen market.
Well, the way it goes now in the console market, it comes down to what your friends have.
There's some truth to that.
Everything's online gaming now, voiceover.
A lot of people I know are buying both consoles.
Exactly.
Which is insane to me. I don't know.
Yeah, well, just get one PC. PC Master Race. Come on.
Yeah, why not just buy a PC, get done with it?
Yeah.
I suppose a console, you walk in, you turn it on, it's done. You know, unless I'm way behind in a console. I haven't played one for years. In a PC, so many different things can go wrong.
Well, I'm sure that's part of it, although it's apparently some of the latest Xbox and PS4s have been having problems with their hardware, so...
Now, which one of the new consoles is the one that you have to wait about 10 minutes for it to install the game before you can play?
Oh, I don't know. I don't have either of them.
It was like that on the PS3, too. Like, when you bought a PS3 game, it was just a disc with an install, and you had to be connected to the internet. That's why I went and fuck Sony. Well, you can't buy a game and then, you need an internet connection to download it, so that's an extra, you know, $59 a month. It becomes too expensive.
Well, that's how the PCs are turning out.
Well, PC's much cheaper now. I don't have to buy a hard copy anymore. I just download it from Steam or any other house out there.
Yeah. Well, you guys want to do the Ars Technica story on AT&T selling phone records to the CIA, or you want to skip that one?
Skip it, please. Fuck that.
All right.
Oh, God.
Actually, somebody's bringing him to court saying it was a violation. So.
It's just constant, man. They're just douchebags, and we know it.
All right. No, we can skip that one. That's fine.
My question is, when is it that we can sell or we'll be able to be paid for handing out our information? Well, companies seem to make a profit of it.
Well, apparently never. You are the product, so.
You are the consumer.
Whenever you have a backbone in your own network.
Yeah.
And you're not selling your information, you're selling all the information you've collected from others.
All right, next story up is from GigaOM, and I hate GigaOM, so I really looked trying to find this someplace else, and I didn't. So it's from GigaOM. Tens of thousands of German internet users have been sent threatening letters by a law firm acting apparently on behalf of a rights holder on the basis that they watched copyright material on pornographic video streaming site RedTube. The letters, issued by law firm UNC on behalf of Swiss firm The Archive AG, demand €250 per watched clip. The films in question include titles such as Hot Stories and Amanda's Secrets. I wonder how many titles they had to go through before finding ones they could put in the articles. According to Stern, some lawyers suggest the court order that permitted these letters should not have been issued on the grounds that while there is plenty of precedent for targeting those who unlawfully download copyrighted material, the law around viewing streams is far less well-defined. The situation is further complicated by the fact that it's not clear to RedTube's users whether content streamed over the service was legally uploaded or not. As for how the viewers' IP addresses were identified, that also remains a mystery for now. But the IT Guard's GladEye software mentioned in court records is reportedly only designed for monitoring file-sharing networks. File-sharing is easier to monitor in this sense as the IP addresses are there for the harvesting unless the user deploys a VPN or proxy. Some have suggested that the users were targeted with malware that harvested their IP address. If so, this would be a new low for a particularly obnoxious facet of the copyright industry. It is already deeply objectionable behavior to send out thousands of threatening letters in the usually correct expectation that none of the recipients will take the costlier route of challenging the letters in court rather than just paying up to make it go away. Porn rights holders have been at the vanguard of this trend as targets' embarrassment has made them even more likely to pay. Now, the reason I'm covering this story is not because porn. Of course, it's always fun to talk about porn, but this is the first time I've ever heard of people getting the settlement letters, you know, the copyright complaints for watching streams.
Right.
Not for downloading and sharing, not for like running a BitTorrent, but just going to a streaming site and watching a film.
Yeah, that's what I was... struck me as odd. On this,
yeah, porn
also.
Or not. I mean...
Yeah. Since when has that been copyright infringement?
Well, it's technically... I guess it is. You're obtaining copyrighted material without compensating the copyright owner. But you're not
distributing. Is the onus on you, or is it on the site?
My understanding, it's always been on the distributor.
Right. Because you weren't actually downloading anything. I mean, I guess you're downloading it temporarily, but you aren't saving a copy of it.
Yeah.
So how are you obtaining it? I don't know.
Well, that's the way. Making copies is how any modern computer works. So, I mean, it's a moot point. But, yeah, I mean, the whole streaming thing, it's the first time I've ever heard of that. So, believe me, I wish I could have found a better version of the story. But, a German firm is actually sending out the settlement letters for people watching a stream. How do you prove that?
I'm guessing from the sound of how it's worded, they're not really doing it for League of Presidents. It's
a cash flow. Yeah,
because it's using... you're using Pern clips to try to, you know, embarrass the people to not bring it up.
Well, not only that, but I mean, the settlement amount is, you know, they said 250 euros. So, I mean, it's less than $1,000. A lot of people are just going to send them the check and say, leave me the hell alone.
Don't tell anyone I look at porn.
Yeah, pretty much. So.
But if anyone's interested, neither of those titles are still on RedTube.
Thanks for that on-the-spot checking there, Madman.
wait, who said it on the spot?
I have to ask, did you open a new tab, or did you just use the existing
New window, privacy mode.
Oh, okay.
I don't want that stuff cached, I could get sued.
All right. And for the last story, this one was from Coinion.com. Bitcoin skeptic and liberal mouthpiece Bloomberg News was up in arms today after a report from the Labor International documented poor working conditions in Bitcoin mines in the developing world. There's widespread abuse, one investigator reported. Children are being forced to mine for blocks and add to the master blockchain, but the difficulty is astronomical. These kids don't even earn the transaction fees they're mining for. Child labor in the Bitcoin mining. Okay, we don't have Swavon to explode. This story is obviously a fake. Nobody is forcing children to mine for Bitcoins.
What? But I had so many plans I was just putting together in my head.
I was thinking of taking a trip to Asia via Australian. I don't know. Starting my own Bitcoin mine with people I found.
Now, what am I going to do with all these orphans I gathered up?
Child labor in the Bitcoin mining has long been a staple of the industry. As an owner of a mining outfit explained, the blockchain was built off the sweat of child labor. I can get a solid 1 or even 2 hash per minute from each kid. Give them an abacus and it skyrockets to 3 to 4 hashes a minute. Do you have any idea how many idle children there are in India? That's a lot of Satoshi.
Did this come from The Onion?
Great. Right in the middle of the damn show, too.
Right in the middle.
I lost my connection to the broadcast box, so I think the whole thing hiccuped.
Weird.
So I'll get to go in Audacity and cut out all the silence before I post this show.
Welcome back.
Did everybody fall out?
Yeah. Yep. I don't know what's still being recorded and what's not. Like, it was like the whole thing hiccuped.
Big hiccup, actually. Yeah.
All right, I'm back in the broadcast box here. Oh, yeah, we lost...
How much did you lose?
A couple of minutes there. I'll have to go check the recording to see. But at least we were doing the joke story when the whole thing crashed out.
Yeah.
It was too funny.
Yeah. So, I have no idea where it cut me, but we were just laughing at it so hard.
We need more child labor to crunch the numbers faster.
Obviously.
Next story, child hackers from China try to silence Galaxy 15.
Oh, jeez. Right in the middle of the damn show. That pisses me off. Maybe we gotta start looking for a new host. I mean, yeah. Well, it's got to be their network connection, because the thing fluctuates like that all the time. So, I guess as a real update from the Digital Dojo, I've pretty much ran my miners nonstop for this last week, and I've managed to mine about 0.005 Bitcoin. And in 1 week, that's actually not terrible for what I'm running, which is for those little ASIC block eruptors on a Raspi.
Right.
And what's that work out to? Like $4, something like that, $5, whatever the current value of Bitcoin is. So I think, I'm not sure because I haven't taken an exact measurement on the amount of power it's using. I'm just going on the registers on the power supplies. I'm probably breaking even on the cost of running the miners power-wise. So, meh. Not a sound financial investment, but it's fun to play with.
Mount Gox is selling exactly at 939 right now.
Ah. So, yeah, I'll probably get about $4 worth of Bitcoin mined there. So.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. No, it works. It's interesting. Everything I had read, I figured I'd have a harder time of it. I was planning on mining other coins and trying to convert them into something useful, but, you know, hey, whatever. So, let's go with the, let's go ahead and move right into this. So, for Digital Jojo, I thought we'd have something we could have a little bit of fun talking about. What do you do to a machine when you're getting ready to throw it out or sell it? If you have a lot of machines, you might decide you want to get rid of a few of them just for space reasons or they're old. But, I mean, when you don't have a computer that just explodes on you and it's still worth, you know, selling to somebody, what do you do to get it ready to sell?
Format. Remove the hard drive. Make sure your personal information is off the machine.
You're close, Madman. You're not going far enough, though. Very first thing. Actually, at work, when we surplus machines, we actually have a standing policy of ripping the hard drive out and putting it through a hydraulic press.
Yeah, I was correct?
Yes.
I was going to say, either there or you do the DoD sweep on it. Writes random data DBAN. And
deban it.
Seven times or whatever.
I've kind of got a list I put together in the show notes here. Most common suggestion is just yank the whole hard disk. If you're worried about losing data that's on that disk, you just keep the disk. You know, get you a USB adapter or whatever. That way you can always go back to your old machine and get whatever. But, the big thing you're worried about there is making sure whoever ends up with your old machine, whether you throw it in the trash or sell it, somebody's going to take a look at it before it gets destroyed, burned down, melted, thrown in the landfill, whatever. So you want to make sure they don't have access to your documents, your passwords, and most importantly, your browser history. My God, you imagine that getting out there? So, you know, of course you don't want to lose anything, so you might clone the disk. I got a couple of links here for quick ways to do that. CloneZilla is open source, easy enough to operate one. It might also, you know, one of the reasons you might clone the disk as opposed to just yanking it is it might not be practical to replace the disk in the machine. A lot of times you're going to have a hard time selling a computer without a disk in it. If it doesn't have a hard disk in it, most people think it's broken. They'll think it's junk. You explain, oh no, you just got to go buy a disk for it. Well, if it's an oddball piece of hardware, it might not be so easy to replace the disk. For example, I've got a Dell Mini 9 netbook, and the hard disk that goes in that is a PATA solid-state drive, but its connector is a mini PCI. It's like Dell came up with this hack job of using a mini PCI connector to hook up an SSD and plug it into an IDE port. So
that is weird. Yeah.
A little bit, yeah. So replacing the SSD in the thing's not the most practical job in the world. So you want to clone what's on there instead. And, of course, CloneZilla is an easy way to do that just to make a quick disk image. But a more interesting thing to do is to go on VMware's site and grab their VMware converter, because it'll actually make an image of your machine and turn it into a virtual machine. You can load it up in, of course, anything VMware, but once you get it into VMware, you could export it as an OPML. Not OPML. OVM? Is that the file format I'm thinking of?
Yeah, are you thinking for virtual or
Virtual Box is the most obvious one, but a lot of that's supposed to be the open one's supposed to be a standard. But yeah, the open VM, so you can load it in VirtualBox or pretty much anything at that point.
Right.
VMware VMs are pretty standard. I think VirtualBox can actually open them directly, anyways. So
yeah, it can.
But the VMware converter is pretty damn handy, especially for old machines. I mean, you just make a virtual machine out of your old machine, that way you can always go back to it and get whatever you need out of it. And then if you're not going to remove the disk, or if you're maybe going to grab another hard disk to shove in it, like, you know, some old disk you've got laying around, you want to wipe it. And obviously, as we mentioned, DBAN is the tool of choice for wiping it. There's not even a question there. You just go grab DBAN and you wipe any disk you're going to lose control of. One thing I do want to point out is check for other storage devices. It's interesting how many laptops we come across with an SD card still stuck in the reader. Or there's actually a number of desktop machines out there that have flash drives built into them for one reason or another. If you ever pull apart most Dell servers, you'll find the internal USB plug for putting a flash drive in. And I've actually got a USB expansion card, like for putting six more USB ports into a machine, PCI card, and it has a internal USB port. I think they included it with the intention that you would hook it up for like a front panel or something. But I've seen a lot of people put flash drives on those, and usually it's for Windows Ready Boost. You know, that way you've got your flash drive hidden inside the machine, or you know, you just have one of those low pro flash drives you may not notice still stuck in the machine.
Yeah, so, or the thumbnail sized ones that are you know, micro SD or mini SD cards or whatever.
Yep. So you always kind of want to give the machine a good once over, pop the case open, and make sure you're not missing any data storage devices, because you know, you never know, somebody who's really good at getting data off these things might get one of the damn things, and well, next thing you know, there's your browser history up on Reddit for everybody to point and laugh at. So, are you back? Or are you still dealing with weather there?
I'm dodging back and forth, opening windows, shutting windows.
I'm sure you've seen the average machine that probably should have been wiped before they handed it to you.
Oh yes, yeah. And you were just saying in internal storage devices. Yes, no one ever checks for them.
Yeah. So I mean, it's really interesting, because that was a thing for a long time. Especially back when Windows first came out with Ready Boost, I remember seeing a lot of manufacturers come up with these flash drives that you could just plug right into the USB headers on your main board to give you an extra 4 gig to use for Ready Boost. Does anybody else remember what I'm talking about with those?
I haven't seen one that plugs in directly under the headers, but like I said, there's a lot of boards will put a USB port on the inside just for that. I've seen, like you said, lots of Dell servers, they all have that. What HP servers have that, so yeah, it's pretty common.
So, yeah, definitely check for the old flash drive stuck inside the case. After that, of course, you want to clean up the machine. You know, obviously, physically clean it up, get the dust out of it. You know, get one of those. Something I've had great luck with on cleaning up the outside of beige box cases is the Mr. Clean Magic Erasers. Those actually work really great for getting, like, you know, pen and shit off the side of these cases.
I was gonna say on the outside, really? I've never tried that before. That's kind of
bed liner cleaner.
I haven't tried that one.
One pot application, like smooth wipe on things, doesn't leave an oily smudge. It's mainly to restore plastic that's been out in the weather too long. It'll take dust off real easy and hide any small scratches.
So, nice. Yeah, so of course then, you know, if it's practical, you want to drop a fresh install of the operating system on the thing. Of course, if you just yank the hard drive and you're selling it as is, that's not going to work. But, you know, if you're going to put a Windows on there, you want to use the Windows license from the sticker on the side of the case. If you've got the original disks that came with it, that's even better. But I don't know about you guys, I usually tend to find the original disks like a year after I've sold the machine.
Yeah, the last machine I picked up didn't come with discs.
A lot don't anymore. You know, they expect you to burn it off yourself. So that's interesting, though. If you've got all those recovery partitions, and I don't know about you guys, I always end up deleting those damn things.
Yeah.
But if you still have them when you're ready to, you know, but you want to keep your hard drive, something you could do is get you another hard drive and just clone the recovery partitions, like going to CloneZilla or Norton Ghost or whatever, and that's the part you want to copy. You don't want to get the main drive partition, just the recovery one, so you could still use that. You know, if you have to dig up an OS X disk, those are interesting to get your hands on. The easiest way to do it usually is just go to the store and buy one of the upgrade disks. They're like $10-$15, so it's usually not a big deal to get a disk for it if you don't have the original. But
wait a minute, you mean there's operating systems out there that are less than $150 a piece?
Well, they're selling it as a quote-unquote upgrade, but I don't think the damn thing actually checks.
Oh, wait, so, we're talking about Apple here anyways.
Yeah, we're talking about
Apple.
You'll
actually be able to use it.
So, but they actually made their last version free on the App Store. So it just downloads it and runs it. So you could – there's not really much to stop you if you've got a functional OS X box from pulling down their installer and extracting the DMG from it and putting together a USB installer. Lots of information out there for doing that. That's assuming, right, of course, you're selling an OS X machine that will run the latest OS.
Speaking of that, giving away the OS for free, I was reading an article, I want to say it was on CNET or something like that. They were suggesting that the only way now that Microsoft can even save face on Windows 8.1 is if they start giving it away for free.
Well,
people
they
will try.
Even that won't help.
I don't think so either, but yeah, I thought it was an interesting suggestion.
They did give 8.1 away for free. They were going to charge
for that. Well, the upgrade, but I mean the actual OS, everything.
No, they were going to charge for the upgrade.
Yeah. I don't think Windows are allowed to give it away under the Competition and Consumers Acts in most countries.
Practices
and all that. Because remember Windows Explorer and the big shit storm there was with that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think they can give it away for free. Just under the market laws, that's all.
Yeah, Microsoft got nailed with tons of injunctions, especially in the EU and other countries. And in the United States, not so much. But outside of the States, they got nailed with tons of stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
well, I mean, even if they charge a dollar for it, it would be
still, it's
interesting. Of course, it's never going to happen.
But yeah, the OS X upgrade discs can usually be got fairly cheaply. So that's... You know, you just got to kind of look around for that. But generally with those, the best thing to do is find the original disk that came with the machine, because I don't know about you guys, but every time I've had to deal with Apple hardware, it's been damned picky about where you get your OS X disk from. Like, oh, you're not using the right one. Well, it's the same version. Well, apparently not. So, I've had that problem multiple times where you had like two 10.5 disks and one works in this machine and one works in this machine and you can't switch them. So, but it's been annoying. But it's, you know, worst case scenario, it's always, well, it's not even a worst case, but it's always fun to leave Linux installed on things, give them away.
That's true. So, that's actually like helping spread, give it to some newbie.
Like, yeah, I left Ubuntu on there. You can always drop Windows back on it if you want. But, you know, that way it's got something on it. There you go. You know, they're probably going to boot it up and look at it at least, so.
Might have a convert.
Never know. You never know. Hell. So. Anyways, I get to actually edit the show to cut all the dead air out of it. But that's all I got for tonight. You guys want to throw anything out before I start reading the promos and close out the show here?
Yeah, I checked out the new IT Crowd show that came out. They've rebooted it, or they've killed it, or something. Anyway, there's a new episode of the IT Crowd. 100%.
Oh yeah, that's hilarious.
Yeah,
like piss off Anonymous, and
it's fucking great. I don't know if they're doing another one or anything like that, but yeah.
No, that was supposed like a reunion to be the end all.
Yeah, well, they ended it perfectly. It would be tragic if they kicked it off again, because I was dreading it when it was announced, and I picked up the courage to watch it last night, and I laughed my ass off for an hour. It was fantastic.
It is pretty good.
Well, you can't be a little person racist. That's not a thing.
I just can't believe how they shoehorned most of the last 10 years of memes in. Like, they even went with the Jessica Slaughter meme and everything. It was fantastic.
All right. Anybody else got anything before we...
I just well, we had the patent article earlier.
Yeah.
And just out of curiosity, I looked up on the government patent site. It only up to date as the end of 2012. The last patent was patent number
8,595,333.
Wow. That many patents. Yeah. You're interested in how broken our patent system is? When Patents Attack is a series of podcasts NPR did on Planet Money, and they went into depth in software patents and a few others that just how broken the system is and all the industries that have sprouted up just to sue people over patents or to protect people from being sued by patents.
Wow.
There are companies whose whole existence is to rent out patents to other companies to defend themselves in patent lawsuits.
Yeah, we... Oh, wait, no, that's not patent trolling. That's something else.
That service is generally offered by companies that also patent troll.
Ah, gotcha.
They're trying to make money on both ends.
So,
defending you from a different patent troll. Yeah.
God. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure decking every Thursday. Shoot the noise on Wednesdays. Missing dialogues on Tuesdays. The Galaxy 15 radio site. The Twitter handle. The feedback forum. The OS grid sim, which has probably got dust on it by now. The feedback forum. The subreddit. And I have nothing every Saturday. Did I miss anything? The drunk shows. Are we doing a drunk show tomorrow, Madman? Do you know?
I don't know. Yeah.
This is probably the last IHN show for this year, I think.
Yeah, that's not surprising. Yeah, well, of course, we're going to have hiatuses for holiday break again. So, yeah. Of course, the
thanks,
show's going to be sporadic. Yeah, thanks, Obama. Shows will be sporadic. I'm going to be probably working on stuff here in the next few weeks, so any downtime, don't get too upset. Shouldn't be down very much, though. That's pretty much all I got, so I'm going to hit play on this music now. We'll be right back.
fuck.